comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you happen to be all around this beautiful planet, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. I'm here because you have a right to know and because you matter. So if you spend all day long with people who act like you don't matter, well, you've come to the right place because you matter and we know it and we'll treat you like you matter. I have some special folks who are getting to see the show tonight who do not normally get to see the show. That would be my daughter, who just had a birthday yesterday, and my mom, and possibly some of the grandkids, but it's a little bit late where they are for them to be up. But I want to say hello to all of them, and glad you're getting to watch tonight. You're getting to see, I know to you, it's, mom, it's just son, and, to my daughter, it's just dad, but you're getting to see the world's number one UFO talk show tonight, and I'm glad you are here. All of you are getting to see the world's number one UFO talk show tonight, and I'm glad you're here too. I hope you'll understand that while I love you, those folks I just mentioned are a little bit closer to me. That's family. So, how was your weekend? Did you have a good one? I hope you had a great weekend. You got all rested up. I know some of you were out on sky watches this weekend looking through night vision equipment and watching UFOs through night vision equipment, because I got some email from you. But I hope whatever you did this weekend, you had a great weekend. And today, of course, is the first day of the work week. And I hope that you have a great week all week. And we're going to do everything we can to make sure that happens by bringing you some great shows all week long, just like we're going to do tonight. My guest tonight is Jeffrey Gonzalez. Jeffrey Gonzalez is the director of the Sanger Paranormal Society, and that's up around Fresno and in California. And you may remember, those who are longtime listeners and longtime viewers of the show, that Jeffrey and some of his friends and people involved in Sanger Paranormal I had a little bit of a run-in with Bigfoot, and they got some evidence, and pretty interesting evidence, and there have been some developments on that, so he's going to join us after the first break and talk to us about that. I want to remind all of you that we publish a free weekly newsletter. It's called The K-Files, and it's free. It's a good publication, and there's absolutely zero genius in not getting it. So just go over to my website, and you'll see right in the middle of your screen it says K-Files. Click that and subscribe, and then you're going to get an automatic email that has a link in it for you to activate that subscription. Be sure you do that, and you're good to go. You'll start getting the K-Files. Right now, we're going to scoot away for a break. We'll be back right after this. All right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith and my guest this evening, Jeffrey Gonzalez from Singer Paranormal Society. And as I said, you'll remember that Jeffrey has been with us before a number of times and has talked about this encounter with a Bigfoot, maybe more than one. And there has been movement. There's been some developments. And so he's back with us this evening. Jeffrey, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Hello, Kevin. Can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah.
All right, sweet.
Yeah. All right, so, Jeffrey, before we get to the movement, the developments, let's do a thumbnail, and really a thumbnail of the event, because we do have new listeners who have not heard what happened, and they need to hear that. So,
sure.
And then it will make sense when you talk about what the developments are.
Sure. This happened in 2010. For all those who don't know who I am, I founded a paranormal society about 10 years ago called the Sanger Paranormal Society. Excuse me. And we investigate everything paranormal. I mean, UFOs, Bigfoot, monsters, ghosts, everything. And I associate myself with people who are in the know-how about certain, whatever it may be. And in this case, I came in contact with a Bigfoot investigator here in Fresno, California, who's been investigating, Bigfoots for about 20 years. He's a high school principal, and he basically took me under his arms, and he has taken me to this spot up in the mountains for a number of years now where these creatures are located. And, we find footprints all the time. They're a dime and a dozen, big deal. When we find one, we don't get excited anymore because, hey, there's another footprint. We hear the creatures. I personally have never had the obligation to actually see one yet. But I've heard them, and I've seen footprints.
When you say you've heard them, what kind of noises have you heard them do?
Well, when we are camping at the particular site that we go to, just like you hear on Finding Bigfoot, and people make fun of the guys on the show because of their howlers and their, whatever they do. But that's what you need to do, really, to actually, see if you can actually get feedback from them. And, you do your, each investigator has their own way of doing their holler, And, David Ragosa did some hollering, and we got some responses back. And many of times in our campsite, we've actually heard what it sounded like, very heavy, something heavy walking in the brush, not too far away from the campsite. Now, you have to understand, this is like, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning when we're around the campfire, and then we hear them walking, 50, 75 yards from us, and, we can't see them. I don't have a FLIR camera. I wish I had, because those things are about a couple $1,000 a piece. One of these days, I plan to purchase one, but right now I just don't have the funds for it. And so, we know they're there. It's not somebody playing a trick on us. We know they're there. No okay. Doubt about it.
Okay, and so let's go back to, I interrupted you. You were telling us about what happened in 2002, I think you said it was.
In 2010. This is the window situation.
Okay.
We went up to the campsite Memorial Day weekend 2010. We set up shop just like we usually do. And Sunday morning, it started to snow. A rainstorm came in unexpectedly. So we had to get out of there really quick. So we started just basically throwing all of our stuff in the back of the truck. I had my pickup, the F-Ford 150, four-door, not a four-wheel drive. And I brought a lot of stuff with me. And, we had, five ice chests full of food, hot dogs, meat, everything you can imagine we had. And we just started throwing everything in our trucks. Well, I started up my truck, and I tried to get out of there, and my wheels just kept turning because I didn't have, traction. I didn't have a 4x4. And, David, the Bigfoot investigator, basically told me, Jeff, man, you're not going to get out of here tonight. And he was right, man. My tires weren't – I wasn't even moving an inch. So I had to leave my truck there with his Jeep because his Jeep didn't even start the following morning. We tried to jump it, and the roads are really bad coming into that site. So something jotted loose, and we had to leave his Jeep and my truck there for two, three nights with all of the equipment. But you have to understand, this is in the middle of nowhere. You know, you get off a road, you take dirt roads, you take another dirt road, and it's way in the middle of the forest. No, you know, there's nobody out there at all. And, you know, I was scared because, you know, it was my truck, and I didn't want to leave all my electronics, but I had to because we had to get out of there. So we had one more vehicle. We were able to, everybody was able to pile up in that vehicle. We made it out of there. Excuse me. It took 2 hours to get out of the spot where it usually takes us 20 minutes to get in because the roads were really bad. And so we made it out, and then on the way out, because of all the commotion and us worrying about trying to get out of there, I'm just about out of that area, and I freaked because I forgot my laptop in my truck. But it was in the back seat, covered with a bunch of blankets. But I was still worried because my life is in this laptop computer. I mean, I had my taxes in there. I had personal information. So here I'm freaking out big time all the way home. And, you know, I get home, I tell my wife what happened, and, you know, she's freaking out too. So, you know, I had to go back and get my laptop, right? At this point in time, I can care less about my truck. I got to get my computer. So I gave my buddy a call, Alan Thomas, who was with us. I told him, you know, Alan, can you please take me back up the following morning to go get my computer because, you know, I need to get it. And he said, sure. And, you know, he has a van, so there's no way he would be able to drive, you know, 2 miles in, 3 miles in where we actually camped out. And so I asked him, you know what, I'm going to have to walk that 3 miles just to get in to get my laptop and walk back out. And I don't want to walk by myself. Can you find somebody to walk down with me? And he said, you know, sure, I'll call my brother and see if he'll do it. And sure enough, he called me a little bit ago. And they both came up the following morning, picked me up. We went up and, you know, Alan parked at the top of the hill. And Jimmy and I trekked back down to the location. Excuse me. I had my video camera in my hand, and I gave Jimmy my 12 gauge shotgun because, you know, I know what's in this area, and, you know, I just wanted to be, you know, when we go up there, everybody has a piece. Everybody is carrying a weapon because, you know, you just don't know what's gonna be out there. Bear, you know, a bobcat, mountain lion, a Bigfoot. So, you know, we started walking down to the location, and about 75 yards from the areas where our trucks were located, we started to run into barricades. And when I mean barricades is that there was this old pine tree laying across the dirt road, and it had been cut down by probably the Department of Forestry a while back and was pushed off the side, but now it was laying across the dirt road. And I told Jimmy, I go, hey, Jimmy, man, this wasn't here a couple days ago when we left. And he goes, really? And I go, yeah, you know, this was not here. And it was all dried out. And, you know, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, did it fall down? Did it accidentally get cut down with the snow and fall down? But no, it was dried. So it was actually a dead tree that somebody physically placed across the dirt road. And, you know, it wasn't a heavy tree. I mean, anybody can easily pick it up and put it and move it. But, you know, it was there. So I took a picture, and we continue on, not more than 20 feet down. We found a couple of limbs that were actually dragged and placed in the middle. And I'm going, okay, Jimmy, this wasn't here. And so I took a picture, and we started again on our way down. Now we're about 40 yards from the truck locations, and we come across another barricades, if you so to speak. It's a tree limb, probably, I don't know, about 5 inches in diameter, maybe about 8 foot, that somebody placed across the dirt road. Now, I'm thinking, all right, what would be the purpose of somebody placing a tree limb that I can easily kick out? You know, it just didn't make any sense. Why would somebody go through all that trouble to place something very easy to get to take out in the middle of the dirt road or across the dirt road? So again, I told Jimmy, man, that wasn't here when we left. So I took a picture, and then the last barricade, this one really freaked me out. This is about maybe 20 yards from the trucks. A couple of years ago, before that year, you know, they had a heavy storm and the snow brought down a lot of the pine trees. So the Department of Forestry had to go up there and basically clear all the dirt roads out there. And they were cutting the logs of these trees in like 14 feet sections and just, you know, moving them to the side of the road. Well, the last barricade was a 14 foot log. About 14 inch diameter. I mean, this thing must have weighed 1,000 pounds. We saw where it was laying on the side of the dirt road, but now it was moved, and it wasn't across the dirt road. It was parallel to the road, but right in the middle, like the dotted line would be, like to separate, you know, the mm-hmm. you know, the east and west. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, how, you know, what is that doing there? You know, and I tried getting on my knees and I tried pushing it, and I'm going, you know, I can't budge. This thing was not going to move. And I didn't see any tracks, any type of scuff marks where somebody physically had to really push it. I mean, it looked like somebody picked it up and placed it there. And, you know, so actually I took a video of this one and, you know, basically looked at where the impression was before and where it was located when we arrived at the site. So, you know, that was freaking me out. I mean, there's not even a 4x4 from the Department of Forestry would have came down there because the roads were that bad. I mean, the holes were probably 3 feet deep and full of mud. There's no way somebody would even come over there. So I'm trying to think to myself, who would have done this? Would a forest ranger maybe saw our vehicles and decided to place these things in the road to keep people away? But that still didn't make any sense because I didn't see any tire tracks, any horse tracks, any footprints, nothing. So, you know, we arrived at the side of the trucks, and everything was as we left it. Everything was still the same. All the food and the ice chest were in the back of my truck. Nothing. I mean, both vehicles were shiny new, like if they were just washed because of the previous snowstorm that we had. Now, the snowstorm, it melted already. So, it, you know, there was no snow on the ground, just little patches here and there. And, you know, everything was just like we left it. So I opened one of the ice chests, got a couple of bottled waters, I got my computer, and we headed back up the hill. And, you know, when we got up there, I Alan was waiting for us in the van. I showed him the pictures of all the trees and stuff, and he was freaking out because, you know, he has heard about about Bigfoot actually physically picking up these things and placing them in roads to prevent people from entering their area. And, you know, I sort of kind of read about it, but I didn't think anything. I didn't think, really, come on, a Bigfoot's going to really do that. So we went home. I called David Regosa, and the Bigfoot investigator, the principal, and I told him what we had found. He says, oh, cool. And then he said, I got a mechanic to come with me tomorrow morning to go repair my truck or my Jeep to bring it up. And I said, oh, cool. Well, I'm coming next morning. So we all went up the next morning, and I told all the guys about the trees and stuff, and they didn't believe me. But as we were getting closer, there they were. And everybody was dumbfounded because we all knew when we left that Sunday morning, the road was completely clear of any obstruction of any type of tree limb or trees, nothing. So we started, you know, removing each one as we got to, you know, the vehicles, and then we came to cross the last barricade, which was that 14 foot long, you know, telephone pole, 14 inch circumference, and everybody was freaking out. So it took four of us on our knees to push that thing out of the way. But what's on this tree trunk is our old dry, broken branches. So, it's like, you know, if
when so you started, can't you couldn't roll it
exactly. Now we were rolling it, the tree limb started to break, snap, 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 until we finally pushed it. But we were on our knees, and as we were pushing it with the levers of our feet, we were disrupting the dirt and we were messing everything up. But before, everything was, I mean, you know, when I first found the log, everything was clean. There was no disruption of the dirt, nothing. And that's what really freaked me out, because what, did somebody physically pick that damn thing, that thing up and place it in the middle of the road? And that's what just blew me away. And all the guys were blown away. So, you know, we finally pushed it out of the way, and it took four grown men to do it, and barely, because we were huffing and puffing, you know, pushing this thing out of the road. So, the rest of the guys said, you know what, we're going to walk it, and we're going to walk the rest of the way and see if we can find any footprints. And I said, well, I'm jumping in the truck with Joe, and we're going to drive in because I walked this yesterday, and I don't want to walk anymore. So we got to the site where the trucks were at. I got down, and I was the first one on the site, and I started looking around. Everything looked to be about, you know, just like we left it, yesterday, because as we arrived to get my laptop, then I turned to my my truck, and there on the left-hand side, the driver's side windows, because you have to remember, I have a four-door, so the two left windows on the driver's side, there was something on both windows. And the first thing that caught my attention was the impression on the back window of a face that was looking right at me. And my stomach just went boom, and I sort of kind of like went down a little bit and to catch my breath, and I started walking closer to the window, and there was this a face of an impression on the window looking right at me. And I was freaking out, and I looked at the driver's side window, and there was some other impressions that I really, at that point in time, I wasn't paying attention much to. I was concentrating on the back window. And that's when I yelled at Jimmy, because Jimmy was there yesterday morning when we walked in. I yelled, I go, Jimmy, get over here. And he came over here, and I go, was this here yesterday? And he's looking, and he looked at me, and he goes, no, man, that wasn't here yesterday. And he's looking at it, and I called Alan. I called everybody to come over here, and they all came over here, and everybody is freaking out. Alan is just like, whoa. And I'm just like, I'm freaking blown away. I mean, for all those who want to know what the heck I'm talking about, you can go to my website. You can just Google Windows Sanger Paranormal Society Bigfoot. We had a press conference in 2010, right after this happened, because we had to show the world what this was. We were not going to sit on it, because we knew exactly what this was. And if we sat on it and came out at a later date, then people would probably have said, oh, you found this 5 months ago and you're barely releasing it. Okay, you guys hoaxed it. But, you know, we had a meeting, and even David Rigosa said, dude, you got something major here. You got to show everybody now. So,
all right, I'll tell you what.
Okay.
We have to take a break in just a few seconds. So let's hold up right there. When we come back, I want you to tell about how you preserved those windows and how you have preserved the evidence that was on those windows. And then we'll move on from there to the new developments. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Jeffrey Gonzalez of the Sanger Paranormal Society. And Jeffrey was relating the story that is the background for these new developments that he's going to tell us about in just a moment. But Jeffrey, to make a long story short, you were able, and by the way, the story of this is on your website, isn't it?
Yes, it is, the whole story.
Okay. with photographs.
Photographs, everything.
Yeah. So tell us the web address.
SangerParanormalSociety.com.
There you
and
go.
And Sanger is S-A-N-G-E-R, little town east of Fresno. That's what I call it, Sanger Paranormal.
All right. So folks can go over there and get all the details. There are more details. And they can see the photographs. But you were able to preserve these windows that were in your pickup truck that had, as it turns out, I guess, handprints and a face print on it.
It had, the back window had, whatever it was, it leaned up against the window, I guess, to look in. And when it backed off, it left the impression from its stomach all the way up to the top of its head. And you can see the eye sockets. I mean, you can plainly see facial features. And on the driver's side window is probably, I want to say, the golden ticket for what's happening right now. There is an impression of lips and nostrils on the driver's side window, and a very killer handprint that you actually used for the front, for your logo, for the, on your website.
Yeah.
And I want to get into that because, I just figured out exactly how that handprint now is supposed to be, and it blew me away because I just found out about this 3 months ago, and I want to basically show this on the air so people can freak out.
Okay, but anyway, before you do that, tell us how. Before you do that, tell us how what you did to preserve this.
Well, on the way down from the mountains that day, I'm driving down the road, and I'm looking on my left hand side, and I have this face looking at me. And I have these lips and mucus on the driver's side window, and I'm going, oh my God, I believe I know what I have here. I need to call somebody right now and figure out what do I need to do to preserve this. Well, my buddy is a forensic expert at, police officer at the Fresno Police Department here in Fresno. And I called him up and I said, this is what happened. And he's laughing at me and he goes, yeah, right. And I said, no, Mickey, this is what happened. I go, I need for you to come over here and take some pictures and basically document this the right way. And he says, okay, well, I can't do it today. Can I come tomorrow? And I said, sure. So, I placed the truck in the garage, and the next day, Mickey came out and he's, looking at the windows and he's looking at me, looking at the windows, and he's going, are you serious? I'm going, yeah, Mickey, because Mickey knows what I do. And he's also sort of kind of a paranormal freak, too. He's also into ghost hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked over to the driver's side window where he automatically knew exactly what he was looking at. He goes, you know what you got there? I'm going, no. He goes, you might have DNA right there. And because on the driver's side window, whatever left the impression, its face went up to the window, and as it backed off, its mucus was running down from the nose down the side of the window.
Yeah.
And I didn't even think of it. I went, oh my God. So he opened his toolbox and he had some extra, what he actually does. I mean, cause this guy's a CSI guy. This is what he does. Dead bodies. He swabs for DNA, blood, takes pictures. He started swabbing and he went right for the mucus and the lips. Cause I didn't even tell him. And he went right for it cause he knew what he was looking at. And he started swabbing, and he got three tubes of the DNA, and he says, here, keep them in a cool place. And he started taking pictures and, taking measurements. And he even told me, he goes, the back window, he goes, that's wet fur right there. That's wet fur. Because this guy, if he knows wet fur, he would know.
Mm-hmm.
And, the driver's side window, the lips are 8 inches long. And the nostrils are 6 inches long. Now, what's kind of cool is that I purchased this about 5 months ago because this is pretty much what it resembles on the actual driver's side window. But what you're looking at here, these lips are only about 5 inches and these nostrils are only like 2 inches. So the head, whatever left the driver's side window, the impression was probably like this.
Wow.
So, and you can see with the upper lip on the window, on the driver's side window. I thought it was the tongue, but it's not the tongue. It's the nostrils, the upper lip, and the lips is what you see on the driver's side window. And at the bottom, there's a handprint. And, when we came out with this last year, people were focusing on the back window, and that was the impression, from the head to the stomach. And people were going, that's a bear, that's a bear, that's a bear. And that's all everybody was saying. It was a bear. But nobody was concentrating on the driver's side window because you can plainly see the lips, the nostrils, the upper lip, and the snot coming down. But for the longest time, the handprint at the very bottom. Now, for those people who are looking at the handprint right now, there are four fingers on the window, and a lot of people don't know this because they don't bother reading what I post, and you know, all the, you know, the evidence that I have is the thumb is at the bottom of the door. So if I know, I mean, anybody knows a paw print is together and it doesn't have opposable thumbs. You know, they don't. So, and I'm looking at the handprint on the driver's side window, and I notice that you can see the fingernails, and I'm laughing, you guys, because I know this sounds ridiculous, but that's what this is you can see the fingernails, and what you see on the picture that you posted on your website, Kevin, is this part of the finger, of the nail and the first part of the knuckle.
So he had his fingers curled over.
Exactly. Just like this. Look. At the window, when he like went that. Up to the window, he went up like this. But I took measurements of this part, and that's why I couldn't figure out what it was. I go, how can that be the fingernail? Because it doesn't measure up. But this part of the hand of the the fingernail on this part is actually this long. Okay? So the hand was huge. And I'm going, oh my God, I get it now. It went like this on the window and went up like this. And I'm going, okay, what kind of an animal would do that? I mean, the handprint is the measurements of the handprint on this part. It's huge. And you can plainly see it on the driver's side window. And I have clear pictures. You can go on the web. Like I said, you can go on the website. AOL ran this. Huffington Post ran this. This is all over the net. And you can clearly see this is the way whatever it went up to the window, placed his hand like this and looked in. And so, you know, that night I took the after Mickey was showing me all this, I went home. And my buddy called me, and he says, and I told him what happened, and he starts laughing at me, and he goes, yeah, right. And I said, no, Dexter, this has happened. And he goes, well, where's the windows? I'm on my door, on my truck. And he goes, you idiot, take them off. And I'm going, duh. So I called Alan, and he got me some connections. The following morning, I went in. I spent $400, and I had both windows removed and put new ones on. And since our press conference of last year, I made the announcement that we need somebody to come in and test this DNA. And, you know, because my buddy Mickey, the forensic expert, said it's going to cost an arm and a leg to do it. And at this, you know, I don't have an arm and a leg to spend on all this. I'm sorry, I don't. Because he said it was going to cost over 10 grand to do it. I'm all, shoot, you know, we don't have 10 grand. Sure, there's six of us, but that's a lot of money. And so I put the word out. And, you know, everybody was saying, well, you know, why don't you just get a Q-tip, go to Rite Aid, go to Walgreens, you know, swab the Q-tip and send it in. I'm going, really, guys? That's not the way you're supposed to do this kind of stuff. And, you know, there was other, at that point in time, about 2 months, no, actually right about that time, there was a couple of other projects going on in the Bigfoot community that were accepting DNA, and they would test it for you for free. And I actually got a call from both those projects, and they said, you know, we're in the process of doing it. You're more than welcome to send us the DNA. I'll give you the address. Send us, some of the DNA, and we'll test it for you. And I'm going, well, wait a minute. You know, I believe I have the golden ticket here, the DNA that's going to prove to everyone once we find somebody that this is what we think it is. But you want me to send you one of my tubes of DNA to the mail to someone who I've never met before in my life and to expect to get the honest to God truth results back? No, I'm not going to do that. I mean, that's stupidity. Who would even do that? Well, apparently a lot of people did. You know, they sent their hair samples, blood samples, just through the mail to these people. I'm going, you don't do that. You don't even know who you're sending this stuff to. So because I did not send my DNA to these people, I got slammed for it. And I wasn't about to send anybody this DNA to the mail without me being there with my eyes focused on what they were doing, because, you know, they could easily have came back to me and said, oh, sorry, it was a bear, but thank you for, you know, submitting your DNA to us. And then later on, if that was what we think it is, they could have came, you know, 5 months later, said, we got it, here it is, the DNA, we found it, and I would have been SOL. So I got slammed, you know, because I didn't send this DNA to the two projects that were happening that time. And for, you know, for a year, we were still looking. I didn't want anybody in the Bigfoot community that was associated with DNA to take this, because I wanted a skeptic. I wanted somebody who doesn't believe in Bigfoot that would take this DNA and just take it for what it is and map it and figure out what it is. And for the longest time, you know, we couldn't find anybody. So I have these windows in a plastic case, you know, sitting at a location someplace. And, you know, it's in an environment where obviously it's not getting dust or anything like that. But still, you know, it's in a closed case. But, you know, again, you know, I don't know anything about DNA. So from what I understand, the longer it's out, then the oxygen, it breaks down the DNA. And the longer you have it out, then the harder it's going to get to extract the DNA. Well, 5 months ago, actually it was like 6 months, 7 months ago, I got an email from a professor that he was watching Finding Bigfoot, and they were talking about DNA, so he decided to go on Google and type in Bigfoot DNA, and lo and behold, my name came up and the incident came up. Well, it just happens that this professor happens to he works at a college very close by Fresno. Mm-hmm. And the reason why he did not hear about our incident last year at the press conference is because he was in South America doing some digging out there. So he missed all the commotion, which I was like, you got to be kidding me. Because, you know, for the longest time, here we have a DNA expert close by Fresno who, if he would have been in town that time when we did the press conference, we would have been able to get the DNA done right there and then. But now, since it's been, you know, close to 8-9 months now, well, we finally got him to start testing the DNA. And, you know, to this day, you know, people still were saying that, you know, the Sangamon Paranormal Society and all the people are putting on the biggest hoax in the world. They didn't think I even had the windows until about 2 months ago, while the professor had the window in the lab and out, I took a couple of pictures. And I sent it to one of the blogs that associated with, you know, Sasquatch here in the United
States. All right, we have to step away for break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. So hang in there, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening from Sanger Paranormal Society, Jeffrey Gonzalez. Jeffrey, as we stepped away for break, you were just beginning to tell us, a lot of people were saying, you know, oh, it's all a hoax, you don't even have the windows you talked about, until a couple of months ago, you were at the professor's laboratory and he had the windows working on them and you took some pictures, and then the break took over. So pick up right there.
Well, I posted the pictures on my Facebook wall, and word got out, and these, you know, Bigfoot blogs and picked up on the picture, and everybody is like, and I remember, like I said, we got slammed back then in 2010 when this all came out. And all of a sudden, people were pulling back after I released the pictures, and they're saying, uh-oh, maybe we jumped the gun. And I'm all saying, yeah, I think you guys did, because, you know, there are five of us that found these windows, including myself. what, why would I ruin my credibility? Why would a high school principal come out in front of the world and expose himself to this? Why would a correctional officer also come out and expose himself to something like this if we didn't think this was real? I mean, that's just absurd. And on top of that, Mickey, the forensic expert, actually also, you know, he actually went up on the, when we were at the press conference, walked up. He actually did mock presentations of what he thought these lips and nostrils were from. And he actually took an impression of a bear, a mountain lion, and a gorilla. And it matched up 100% to a large gorilla's face. And that came from the forensic expert. So now the professor is in right. For those who don't know, our professor is in talks with Dr. Sykes out of Oxford, England. And for all those who don't know who Dr. Sykes is, he's the one who came out about 6-7 months ago about finally trying to find DNA to come up with the, you know, the evidence to prove of Bigfoot's existence. Well, our professor here in Fresno and Dr. Sykes has been emailing and actually talking to each other, trying to figure out the best way to extract this DNA. And so far, we've already tried twice, and he's having a tough time extracting the DNA because it's been out in oxygen and out in the environment so long that it's evaporating. So we're going to try it one more time, and we're going in a couple of weeks to try it again. Now, Finding Bigfoot, the show on Animal Planet, was out here in February filming an episode for the show. They went up to the mountains because they heard a lot about, you know, Sasquatch and Bigfoot up in the Sierra Mountains. And Alan Thomas, who was with us the day we found the windows, he was actually he was hired by the production company to take the Finding Bigfoot crew around because he knows the mountains really well. So while he was up there on the last day shooting with the crew knew of Alan because of the windows. And that last day of shooting, while it was snowing, they turned on the camera and they pointed the camera at Alan and they said, "All right, Alan, tell us about these windows." And Alan is, you know, is hesitant for a bit, and he decided, "Okay, what do you want to know?" So he started describing to them the chain of evidence that occurred when we arrived at the scene, found the window, the whole nine yards. And the crew was dumbfounded. They didn't know about any of this evidence. And as a matter of fact, they were really upset. And according to what Alan was telling me, that they were blown away. And I'm going, what do you mean they were blown away? This was all in the news. This is on my website. This is everywhere. But according to Alan, according to them, when this all came out, somebody told them it was a bear. So they just ignored everything. Well, they decided to go ahead, like I said, they were filming Alan, and they decided to do some experiments up there, and Alan was describing the whole process of me getting the forensic expert taking the DNA off the windows, which they didn't know about. They didn't know about the trees in the windows. They didn't know anything about that. And they were really blown away that I was smart enough to take the windows off my truck. They were floored. And again, they didn't know about that. So what's going to happen in 2 weeks on Finding Bigfoot is, you know, they did an episode of, you know, they do their regular routine. You know, they go up, they do town hall meetings, and they find the best witnesses to get, and they, you know, they go out and they film those, you know, type of scenarios. Well, from what I understand is that they're going to include the windows in that episode in 2 weeks. Now, they didn't have the actual windows there, but what I did is I sent them all the pictures, the videos, everything that's on my website and that's out in the internet world to them. And from what we understand, and it's on the internet, that episode that's going to air December the 2nd, Sunday night, they called it the Sierra Spy.
Now, okay, now why are they calling it the Sierra Spy instead of something Bigfoot?
I don't know. But, mm-hmm. You know, we didn't know if they were going to include the windows at all. Okay, so, but when we found out that they called it the Sierra Spy, it sort of kind of makes sense, you know, somebody spying in the windows, I guess, and that's what they call the episode. So I'm thinking that they are definitely going to be talking about the windows. We don't know, but I'm going to say probably 99% say yes, that they're going to be talking about the windows. Now, according to Alan, and Alan couldn't tell me any of this stuff because he signed a contract and to divulge any information, but they did some stuff up there to try to recreate some of the impressions, from what I understand. And I don't know how they did it or what's going on, but hopefully they're going to show that on Sunday on December the 2nd. So I can't wait because I want them to show the world what we have. To this day, and like you said, you know, a lot of your listeners probably don't even know this happened, which blows me away because, you know, I had a press conference at a hotel. I brought in the news media, and lo and behold, you know, some of the major networks got a hold of it, but not that many ran with it. And the reason why is, you know, everybody knows about the Bigfoot in the freezer hoax that happened several years ago.
Yeah.
Okay, Tom Biscardi. Once that happened, that pretty much killed all the Bigfoot investigators' credibility. It just went down the drain because of that incident. And that's what happened with us. You know, they thought, oh, my God, these guys are trying to pull another hoax just because, you know, to make money or whatever. And, you know, some people took our story and ran with it. Some people laughed at it. And because nobody really took the time to look at the windows, the evidence, to read the chain of evidence. Even the Finding Bigfoot crew didn't do their job. And, you know, and which blows me away. Here you got a show on TV that they're looking for Sasquatch and looking for the best evidence out there. And here they barely find out about my windows, about what actually happened.
Let me tell you, as someone who produces a show, and I produce it every single workday, 5 days a week, there is such a glut of information available out there. There's so much information that the problem is getting to the best information, sifting through it all. Let me give you one example. Every day when I get up, one of the first things I do is check the email. While I was asleep, because I check the email all throughout the day, but while I was asleep, we get 3,000-4,000 emails. Now, a lot of that is junk. Most of it is junk.
Right.
But if I didn't have a system set up that would weed through all of that and get down to the real emails that are really for the show, I would never be able to find everybody's emails and respond to emails and so forth. However, we have some very rigorous spam filters. And sometimes people will send me what is a real email that the software will determine, well, that's spam, and it gets rid of it, and I never see it. So things like that happen. By the way, for the listeners, that's why there's a contact button on my website, folks. That's how you get through the spam filters. Use the contact page. It will work 100% of the time. In their defense, it's just possible that they had so much information overload that this just kind of got somehow lost in the shuffle. It does happen. All right, we have to take a break, and we'll be back more with Jeffrey Gonzalez right after this.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and for those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. You, of course, have my sincere sympathy for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour, and all my deepest, sincerest, and best wishes, prayers, and hopes that you never suffer that tragedy again. We are talking this evening with Jeffrey Gonzalez. Jeffrey Gonzalez is the founder and director of Singer Paranormal Society and sort of the eye of the storm about Bigfoot these days because of this Bigfoot incident that happened in 2010 in which he was able to gather... 2011.
Yeah.
In which he was able to gather... DNA. All right, so we're going to open up the telephone lines. They are open now, and Jeffrey and I will continue to talk, but we want you to join the conversation. And the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, we understand that making an international long-distance call can be expensive. However, we would love to hear from you. If you would like to call that number, give us a call, 623-444-5889. However, we do have another option for you called a flash message. And so you can just go over to my website. Scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above it is a link that says Flash Message. So if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, and by the way, we include in that Alaska and Hawaii because when they make a call into the continental United States, it's pretty expensive. It's kind of like doing an international call. So they're included as well. Everybody else, hey, use the phone, all right? Jeffrey, now the big question, what is Bigfoot? By the way, there was a caller that just called in, and I missed the call because I was busy punching buttons and doing things and didn't see that. So if you'll call back, we'll get you. 623-444-5889. What is a Bigfoot?
I haven't had the slightest idea. I wish I knew. I don't know. I really don't know, Kevin. I mean, if that's the million-dollar question, what is a Bigfoot? You know, is Bigfoot for real? I think it is. And you know, what's funny though is, you know, when I tell people about, you know, Bigfoot encounters and what people are witnessing, and I tell them that. You know, it happened here, and it happened, you know, also 30 miles that way. And then they go, you mean there's more than one Bigfoot? And I'm going, really? Did he just say that? But, you know, you have to understand these things are all over, you know, and there's more than one type of species. You know, you have your different colors. You have different heights. You know, they reproduce just like us. That's why there's so many of them. You know, you have your parents, and they have kids. You have photographs that are out there, not knowing what are real or not, but, you know, some photographs show little arms around the shoulders of these, you know, tall creatures, and they're just like, you know, they're holding their children. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your elderly, you have your older type of Bigfoots. They say the higher you go in elevation, then the Bigfoots are actually a lot taller.
In other words, when you say the higher you go in elevation, you're talking about as you go up the side of a mountain, the higher up you go, the taller they get.
The higher, let's say you go 10, 13,000 feet elevation, they say the Bigfoots could actually go up to about 15 to 16 feet tall.
Wow, now that's big.
That's huge. You know, if I ever did happen to see something like that, I probably would have a heart attack and die right there and then. But
be DOA. Have a call. Let's take the call, and then you and I will continue talking as well. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Joni in St. Louis.
Hi, Joni.
Hi. I really am fascinated with that photo he has on his website, I guess.
Yeah.
With the paw. What What hand would that be, the left or the right?
Which, there's two handprints. There's one on the driver's side window, and there's also one on the back window. Well, not back window, but it's like on the door a little bit.
Right.
So I don't know which one you're looking at.
Yeah, which one are you looking at, Joni?
I'm looking at the one that's got all the seared glob above it, and then it looks like it has a claw to that. That's that second window, the back window.
Okay. And your question is?
Which hand?
That's probably going to be the right.
Too.
That's the right. Because the photograph, the picture that Kevin has on his website is the driver's side window, and that's the left handprint. And the one on the right is obviously the other one, which is the back window.
Okay. Well, the one claw, you know how dogs have dew claws? D-E-W, dew claws?
Okay.
They get snipped.
Okay, what about it?
When they're puppies?
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if that claw isn't a dew claw.
Well, you know, and when, you know, when we first found, you know, the impressions on the windows, you know, the first thing everybody said was, okay, it's a bear. But you have to take all the evidence first. Okay, now, the back of my truck, I had 5 ice chests full of food. Okay, now, we're talking steak, prime rib, hot dogs, everything was open. Everything's right there in the back seat of the back of my pickup, not more than 3 feet from the window. If this was a bear, now, for all those who go camping, what does a forest ranger always say? If you have food, even if you're in a campsite, you need to put it far away or high up, or, you know, get it out of your campsite or your tent area, because if a bear gets that, it's going to tear apart the ice chest and whatever's in it. Now, go to YouTube and look at videos of what bears have done just to get to the back, to crumbs in the back, you know, seat of a truck or a car. They will literally break the glass. They will tear apart the door. If this was a bear, the bear looked in my window to see what was in my window and went on his way without taking any of the food. Now, if a bear would have climbed up on the window or the door, it would have probably had his claw marks and probably would have scratched my paint, and there would have been scratches everywhere, dirt everywhere. But there was nothing like that. Okay, now, again, you know, you're probably focusing on the right handprint, which is fine. Look at the left handprint. Okay, that's not a paw. I don't care what you say. I've had people who are in the know-how of, you know, zoologists who are aware of paws and handprints. That is not a paw. You can plainly see knuckles and the nails of the hand on the back, on the driver's window.
Oh, I agree. I automatically thought of a Bigfoot right away.
Yeah.
I just so noticed the pointiness of it, and it reminded me of a puppy will have a dew claw that sometimes gets cut, and I thought, well, I don't know how that's really being positioned, but you can see the demarcation of the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's obvious. To me, it's a primate. It's not a bear.
Yeah, it's not a bear.
I'm curious about the shape of that pony.
Yeah, and again, you know, if again, you know, everybody who was there, and we even had veteran campers, and they came up to me, even the mechanic, he said that was a bear right away. But then he looked at my back truck, and he goes, wait a minute. He goes, you're telling me you have 5 ice chests. And I have a video. You can go and look at the video that I have posted, because as soon as I got to the location for the first time and saw the impressions, I took out my iPhone, and I started videotaping exactly everything. I even went back and I videotaped the back of the truck. You can see my pickup with the ice chest there. if that was a bear, it would have torn apart the bed of the bed of the back of my truck, the tailgate. It would have probably been bent down. The ice just would have been everywhere, and they would have had a smorgasbord, but nothing was touched. So,
it's,
you know,
yeah, it's one of the best pieces of evidence I've ever seen. So, thank you. I won't stay on the line. I'll let somebody else call in.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, in this case, it appears Bigfoot, or whatever that was, had manners.
And that's what blows me away. You know, there was food there. Why didn't the Bigfoot open up an ice chest and take something? Now, he might have, because I did not count every single hot dog or pastry or, you know what I'm saying, before we left. I did not, you know, for all I know, he could have opened up one of the ice chests and took something and left, and I would have never known it.
Yeah, but a bear wouldn't do that.
Oh, absolutely not. A bear would have had claw marks everywhere. He would have climbed on the back of the bed. It would have been scrounging, just torn apart the ice chest everywhere, you know. And a lot of people also said, actually one person said, and this is embarrassing, but I'm going to say it because he actually was quoted on the Huffington Post, AOL. Lauren Coleman, people of all people, when this was released, you know what he said that was?
A bear?
He said no, he said it was a homeless person.
Oh, yeah. We talked about that last time.
Yeah. He said it was a homeless person. Now, we're talking Lauren Coleman, people. Lauren Coleman could easily have said a bear. Lauren Coleman knows a lot about Bigfoot, just like Jeff Meldrum. Lauren Coleman could have easily said it was a bear. Why didn't he say it was a bear? Because he know what a bear looks like. He know what type a bear would have done to my truck. He didn't say it was a bear because he know that was not a bear. If he would have said it was a bear, people would have laughed him out the door. So the next thing he said, it was a homeless person. But the only problem with that is, what is a homeless person doing 2.5 miles in the middle of nowhere up in the mountains? He would have died of starvation a long time ago. Now, if it was a homeless person, he should have taken sleeping bags, tents, and he could have made a sandwich. But he didn't. Okay? So a homeless person is ridiculous. And he got busted for saying that. Matter of fact, the writer for the Huffington Post, the Weird News, told him, are you sure you want to say it's a homeless person? Because I'm going to quote you on that. And he actually started laughing. And sure enough, Lauren Coleman said it was a homeless person. And I'm going, really?
Yeah, well, everybody makes mistakes here and there, huh?
No, you can't make mistakes like that in this business, though. You can't.
Well, certainly not in public. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. The mystery of Bigfoot. Well, you know, the mystery, at least for here in the United States, is I believe I'm correct when I say that all 50 states have reported sightings of Bigfoot. And that would include... And this is what's kind of amazing to me. It's not amazing to me that they would be seen in Alaska. But it is amazing to me that they would be seen in Hawaii. And I don't know that it's true that they've been seen in all 50 states, but I have read that they have been sighted in all 50 states.
Wow.
But then again... They are, a version of them is seen in Indonesia, and those are islands. The entire nation of Indonesia, it's all islands. A whole bunch of islands, a long string of them. They have been seen, a version of them, in Australia. All over Asia, they've been seen. And, so I guess, and in Russia, I believe they call them the Alma. So they've been seen all over the world. And a whole bunch of them have been seen here in the United States. I haven't seen one, but I heard one. And people have asked me, well, how can you be sure that's what it was? Well, I can be sure what it wasn't. It was in Louisiana, and the forest the floor of the forest, if you can, you know what grapevines look like. Now imagine grapevines growing on the floor of the forest, except that they're about an inch to 2 inches thick. And it's just all a net of this stuff on the floor of the forest. You can't walk on it. Heard something huge walking. I cleared out of the forest and back into my backyard. And whatever it was that was huge and walking in the forest, the best I can tell you is it screamed. And I've had people say, well, maybe it was a panther because they do that. You know, they'll scream. No, look, I know what that sounds like. This was no panther. As to steal a phrase from a famous politician, I have met panthers, and believe me, this was no panther. To the telephone, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
Jeffrey, I have to apologize for what I'm about to say, but I am glad you got some testing, and I hope they find some DNA this next time. But, Kevin, you asked the wrong question.
What was the question?
You asked what he heard. I still maintain the mating call of a Bigfoot is the same as a slightly enraged mother-in-law.
I don't know.
I'm glad my mother-in-law is not listening.
My mother-in-law speaks Thai, and I do not, so you know, I don't know whether she's enraged or not.
Yeah. But, Jeffrey, I hope they're able to extract some DNA this time.
I hope so, too. I really hope so, too.
Just too bad they don't have a tooth because they can get the DNA out of that. Too bad they don't have something physical.
And that's exactly what the professor said. He said because if it was blood or saliva like what we have, which is saliva, mucus, he said it evaporates in time. Now, because of hair and bone, because what they do is they get into the middle of that. They drill into the actual DNA that hasn't been touched by oxygen, by air, and that's the reason why they drill in and get the stuff out from inside. And because of, you know, of the mucus, you can't do that. So, you know, I hope to pray to God that, you know, this third time is a charm because, you know, I know what we have here. I know what we have here. No doubt about 100%. I mean, but, you know, you can't prove anything. Sure, you see what you see on the windows, but, you know, if we need the DNA, it's too bad that I didn't find him when we did the press conference. He was in South America, or else I think, you know, we would have world news, man. World news. The time, I mean, this would have been the find of a century. I mean, come on, really? A new species, Bigfoot? Not God. You know, I'm just upset that, you know, I didn't find him or he didn't find us before. Because I'm bummed. I'm really bummed.
Well, I'm crossing my fingers for you. So good luck.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Brent.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Yep.
623-444-5889 is the telephone number. Those of you who are outside of the USA and outside of Canada, feel free to either call us or use the flash message feature. If you're in the USA or Canada, use the telephone, 623-444-5889. Jeffrey, do you think that All right, let me set this up. Professor's going to go back in for DNA a third time. He's going to make another attempt. And let's say that he's successful. Let's say that he comes out and says, well, whatever this is an unknown species to us. It has characteristics of blah, 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 blah. But it's not a known species. At this point, then, those who are on the side of Bigfoot exists will be saying it's Bigfoot. And those that are on the side of Bigfoot does not exist are going to be saying either, well, we don't know what it is, or there was a mistake in the DNA testing. How are you going to handle that?
Well, that's a good question. And you have to understand, and again, you know, I am not a scientist. Oh, my God, not even close. So I am learning how this process is done, and I am learning from the professor what it, what is done in the lab. And, you know, once they extract the DNA, then they're going to take it apart. They're going to input it into the data bank of the world. And the first they're going to find out, okay, is it in the data bank? If it comes back not in the data bank, then they're going to take it one step further, and they're going to map it. And he said they can actually map it. And again, this has been a while since he told me, but you can actually figure out, you know, what percentage, you know, I'm not a scientist, so please, you guys, forgive me for, I'm probably screwing this up, but they can actually go and tell you, you know, what part, you know, strands it's from, you know, caveman days, if so be it, you know, so they can really take it apart and tell you where it's from, what parts it's involved in this DNA. So there's no way that you can make a mistake. DNA is DNA. You cannot make a DNA up if you wanted to. Okay, you can't. You know, DNA is DNA. Only the big guy upstairs can make DNA. Now, so if someone says, well, no, you guys screwed it up in the lab and you guys got two DNAs and mixed it together, no, you can't do that. That cannot happen. So, once, if they do extract the DNA and they say it's not in the database and take it further, then he is, like I said, he is in talks with Dr. Sykes out of Oxford. So together, hopefully somebody in Oxford they're going to get some type of DNA sample that comes back exactly or close to what we have, and they're going to compare it. So the more DNA that they get, then it's going to validate their findings. Now, it's not like they're going to come out and say, we got it. You know, there's processes they have to go through. There's papers that have to be written, the whole nine yards, for the science journal in order for them to confirm the findings. So it's not like, you know, once it comes out and they say you have an unknown species here, I can't come out and tell the world until they go about and do their, you know, scientific stuff and get it validated and all that. But what's kind of cool about this is that, you know, once people are going to go, well, where did you get the DNA? Well, we got it off this window here with the 8-inch lips and the 4-inch nostrils. Okay. And what are people going to say then? They can't. I mean, what on earth has 8-inch lips and 4-inch nostrils? This guy right here. So, because I took the windows off and I have them preserved, we have something to show people where the DNA came off of. You know, a lot of people, you know, you can have blood, you can have hair, but I think I have way more. I have a photograph of the Bigfoot on the back window.
All right, we have to step away for break. And when we come back from this break, we will continue talking with our guest this evening, Jeffrey Gonzalez. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Jeffrey Gonzalez from Sanger Paranormal Society, and we're talking about Bigfoot. Jeffrey, during the break, I received a flash message from David in the UK. I want to open up this segment of the show with that flash message. David says, while Bigfoot may have been sighted in all 50 states and in most of the world, I am not aware of any Bigfoot sightings in the UK. Jeffrey, are you aware of any Bigfoot sightings in the UK?
I am not aware. Nope. And when you mentioned even Hawaii, I was like, really, Hawaii? That one's a new one to me, too.
Well,
so.
Yeah, let me put a I want to restate the disclaimer I put on it. I read, as I was preparing for the show, I read that Bigfoot sightings have occurred in all 50 states. And then my comment was, that's kind of surprising to me because that includes Hawaii. Exactly. However, I thought about this. There is a version of Bigfoot that is being sighted in Indonesia. And those are islands. So, who knows? You know, maybe. That might be a true statement. I don't know that it is a true statement. I'm just repeating what I read today. No, I'm not aware of any Bigfoot sightings in the UK. And I'm... To be honest, I'm not aware of Bigfoot sightings in most of Europe. However, once you get over to Russia, there's Bigfoot sightings. And in fact, there's an incredible story of a female Bigfoot that was captured and was trained to be a house servant and was mated with some of the men of the village, and her descendants live today. And are you familiar with that story?
No, that was a new one to me.
I talked with someone, this was in Siberia, I talked with someone who has lived in Siberia and said that he had seen some of these people that are supposed to be descendants, and he said, man, could be.
You never know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the world is so big. Like, you know, if it wasn't for the internet, you know, we would not be hearing about these stories. You imagine, I mean, to this day, there are probably stories that people have that they have not even approached anybody with, you know,
right.
And that's what's good about what I'm doing is, you know, people are hearing about me and what I'm doing. I'm getting my word out, my hotline number. And people are coming forth. You know, we have Bigfoot coming down to the foothills near the towns and the cities of Fresno. And that's how far they're coming down for food. You have to understand, too, is that the central San Joaquin Valley of California is the fruit basket of the world. We farm, you know, we have everything here from fruit to vegetables. And during the winter months, the Bigfoot actually come down. They have been seen, you know, going into cherry orchards and apple orchards and oranges. They love oranges. I've actually had a police officer and his wife coming home on a Saturday night from dinner in a little town called Orange Cove, California, which is southeast of Fresno. And this is like bottom, you know, of the valley. We're not talking foothills. We're talking the valley now. Mm-hmm. And, they were driving down the road, and they saw this huge bipedal creature walking from right to left, from one orange cove to orange orchard to the other one, you know. And he was able to tell me about it because he heard about, you know, Bigfoot, you know, what we're doing. And he just wanted to tell somebody his story. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening. So, you know, don't tell me that these things don't exist, because I have police officers and I have military personnel that are coming forth and telling me that they see these things, they know the government knows about these things, and they're not telling anybody about them. Why? You know, I have a couple of theories. You know, and this is a whole different subject that we can get involved with, but for all those who don't know, Yosemite National Park is the number one national park in the United States where missing people, where people go missing. And a lot of people don't know that. I mean, we have hikers who go missing all the time and their bodies aren't found. You know, sure, they could be rolling down a cliff and dying and not finding them, but you have children go missing. You have elderly go missing right in front of their their parents, you know, while they're playing. All of a sudden, boom, they're gone.
The elderly are playing in front of their parents?
Well, the kids are playing in front of their parents. Take that back. But, no, I mean, all types of people are disappearing up in the mountains, and there's a big hush-hush about it. There's a book that, for all those people who need to read this book, it's called Missing 411 by David Pilates. He's a retired police officer, now Bigfoot investigator. He has written two books, one for the East Coast and one for the West Coast, because he has investigated disappearances that go way back to the early 1900s. And a lot of these disappearances, all these disappearances that he has wrote about have similar connections on how these people are disappearing. It's when I heard, when I read his book, it has, and my wife also read the book, it has changed our whole style on camping. I could tell you that right now. I have some people who have read the book, and they will never go camping again. Okay?
My daughter is listening to the show tonight, and yesterday was her...
scare you to death.
Yesterday was my daughter's birthday, and for her birthday, they went camping. And so you're making her nervous now, but she survived.
I'm going to tell you right now, Kevin, that if you have children, you do not let them go 10 or 15 feet away from you. Not your campsite, from you. If you really want to know what's really going on, you get that book, Missing 411, and it will change your life when it comes to camping. I guarantee you, because it has done that to my wife and I.
Are you afraid of Bigfoot?
Absolutely.
Why?
Absolutely.
They didn't attack you.
No. Well, you have to understand, though, Native Americans go way back that they have said that you need to be aware of these creatures. Native Americans know what they are talking about when it comes to these creatures because they were here first, okay? My buddy Alan Thomas is part Indian, and he has friends who are Native Americans who are, you know, way up there in the and they still live up in the mountains in the reservations. And they do not let their families, their kids, go out at night to play out in the woods because they say that that these Bigfoots will take you. And, you know, you need to read Missing 411 because it will change your life. I guarantee it will.
Is it possible, and this stems from what you've just said, and then I'm going to ask a question, and then I'm headed somewhere with that. Is it possible that all those trees that were put into the road that you told us about, those barricades, were put there by the Bigfoot to keep other people from coming and invading your property?
Bingo. And I want to tell you why you nailed it. Because you guys have to understand, David Ragosa, the actual Bigfoot investigator, has been going to this spot for about, I want to go close to 10 years now. So they know him. He has some killer video of, you know, granted, you know, it's from a far distance, but it's hard to really tell, but there's these things standing up, you know, about 8 or 9 foot tall. They know David. They know his voice. They probably know his smell. They probably, you know, recognize his truck. Now, what we are, you know, as when this all incident, you know, occurred, we were trying to figure out, okay, why the trees, you know, why the impressions on the windows, you know, what happened here? Well, you know, that morning, and then there's something that I didn't tell a lot of people that happened, that you know, I have, because I'm an investigator for the paranormal, I have all kinds of gadgets and gizmos. Well, I have a setup where I have 4 motion detectors and a receiver. And these are all wireless, and they're waterproof. When I go camping, I place each motion detector on the north, south, east, and west of our campsite, and I have the base of the receiver right next to my head in the tent, or in the trailer, wherever, you know, I'm sleeping. And if something happens to, you know, walk in that area, then that motion detector will send a signal to my base, and it will activate a chime. Well, that morning, Sunday morning, when it was snowing, and we got up, the motion detectors at the north and south side went off at the same time. Okay. Now, it has been raining all night and snowing all night, that these things are weatherproof. A lot of people are saying, okay, well, you know, maybe the water got to it. Well, no, because at exactly 5:30, the north and the south motion detector went off together. And, you know, that is pretty much telling me that, you know, these things were there. These things were definitely there.
Okay,
here's
where I'm headed with this. If these guys, these Bigfoot, if they thought enough of David Ragosa or you or whatever to try and protect your property by putting up barricades, then why would you be afraid of them?
I personally don't want to take a chance. You know, from what you read, these things are, you know, they could be between 6 feet to 8 feet to 9 feet to 10 feet tall. I don't know how they would react if I would confront one by accident. Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to take a chance. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I have a family. I have kids. I don't want to die looking for Sasquatch. So, I am going to protect myself. I don't know what they would do or how they would react. And you're right. You know, I think they did place those trees there to protect them because, you know, it was David's Jeep was one of those vehicles. Now, what we also came across and put a theory to the impressions is that when that day when Jimmy and I came down to retrieve my laptop, it was that door that I opened to get my laptop out was the one with the impression of the full body on the back window. Now, could have these creatures have been watching us trek down that dirt road all this time, seeing me and get to the vehicles, open the door, get my laptop, and these Bigfoots up in the hills looking at us probably going, why didn't the idiot take his car? You know, and then after we left, came back and peeked in the window to see what was so interesting in that car that I had to come and get. Okay? Because that all happened in one night. Because you have to remember, we came on a Tuesday morning at 11 o'clock, walked down to get my laptop. Nothing was on my windows. The next morning when we came back to get the cars, that's when the impressions were on the windows.
All right, we have to step away for break. And we will return after this break. And when we do, we will be in final approach. And so that means you have to, if you plan on giving us a call, I'll get it set in a minute. I'm an old guy. I get away with this, you know. Look, if you plan on giving us a call, you need to do so pretty quickly because we're going to be out of time. We come back from this break. We're on final approach, just a few minutes left. We're talking this evening with Jeffrey Gonzalez, and we're talking about this Bigfoot experience that he and his team had and the evidence they gathered. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are now on final approach. That means we only have a few minutes left until the end of the show. My guest this evening is Jeffrey Gonzalez. Jeffrey, we have a caller on hold, so let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent again. I know you don't like second-time callers, but I have some information for that guy from the UK.
Yeah, okay.
Look up the old gray man from Ben McDooey. It's the Highlands of Scotland.
From the Highlands of Scotland. Now, you're familiar with that story, right?
Yeah.
Okay, is it a description that matches Bigfoot?
Let's see, 10 to 12 feet tall, big and gray, kind of, yeah, it pretty much meets Bigfoot. Can't turn, doesn't have a mobile neck, he turns his whole body to turn his head.
Hmm. Okay. Outstanding. Thanks, Brent.
Good to know.
Yep, goodbye.
Bye. So, there you go. Let's see, who was that? David from the UK.
Now, you know, back on those windows, mm-hmm. you know, we've had a year to really think about what happened out there. And, you know, we tried to pick this whole scenario apart. And Alan Thomas came up with a theory on the impressions on the windows. Now, at the back window, you notice there's a full upper body impression, you know, the upper shoulders and the face and the head, but only the lips and the nostrils on the driver's side. Well, Alan said, well, you know, Jeff, the reason why the full impressions on the back and just the lips and nostrils. And I said, no, tell me. He said, my back window is the privacy glass. So, you know, in order to really look into the privacy glass, you would have to literally put your hand, you know, like we do, humans, go up to a window to knock out the glare and look like this. Well, Bigfoot, they don't know how to do that. So what are they going to do? They're going to put their face all the way up into the window to look in there. Now, on the driver's side window, you just have the lips and the nostrils. So you don't really have to physically put your whole face and body against the window. Therefore, that's why only the lips and the nostrils were left. And we think also that there might have been two Sasquatches there because the impression on the back window does not even match the size of the lips and the nostrils on the driver's side window at all. And that even goes, now go back to the logs and the trees that were placed on the dirt road. The third barricade that we came up to, you know, you have a stick, a limb that's probably like, it's, you know, 3 inches diameter, 4 inches diameter, that's about, you know, 8 feet that a baby can physically pick up, you know, a four-year-old, a five-year-old. What would be the purpose of something or somebody putting something that minute, simple, across the dirt road? We're thinking because maybe there might have been a youngster Bigfoot trying to copy the mother or their father, because something very big had to have lift that 14-foot-long log and placed it in the middle. So maybe, again, we're just throwing theories out there that there was two of them, and there was a youngster Bigfoot trying to mimic the parent by mm-hmm. placing stuff in the dirt road as well. Mm-hmm. And you guys, I have pictures of that. Go look at it, and you can understand what I'm talking about, because that doesn't make any sense. That particular tree or limb, you know, you can kick it out of the way, but something put it there. Why?
Mm-hmm. Well, that would make sense, because youngsters do like to mimic their parents.
Yeah.
And, in fact, you know, that's true throughout the animal kingdom, including humans. So it's very possible. Do you think that Bigfoot is a type of human?
I don't know. I don't know, Kevin. You know, there are stories out there, and now I'm going to really step into the paranormal side. You know, there are people who say, and again, you know, I don't know. I have never spoken to anybody with this type of experience, but they have people who have actually said that they've witnessed a Bigfoot walking and all of a sudden disappear and then reappear and continue walking.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard that many times.
Yeah.
You know, these things, whatever they are, like Alan Thomas would say, they're ninjas. These things can move. These things, they live up in the forest. They know how to hide. You know, I wish I knew. I really wish I knew. But you know that they're very intelligent creatures for a fact. You know they're smart, because they would not be able to hide from humans this long if they weren't smart. You know, they keep their distance away. They try to keep their distance away from us. You know, sometimes we get caught or people get caught by accident in the same area as these Bigfoots, and that's how these sightings occur. It's not that investigators are the ones who are capturing these videos and pictures. They are regular people who are not looking for Bigfoot, who happen to be at the right place at the right time, and all of a sudden turn and say, what the heck is that? Snap, snap, or video. That's what we are getting. It's not that, you know, the investigators of the world are getting this bit. I mean, it. I wish it was, but it, these people.
It almost seems like Bigfoot creatures know how to avoid.
Yeah.
The investigators. You know, the investigators put out remote cameras, and by remote I mean they're out away from the camp. And their motion detector cameras and so forth. And, you know, there's a lot of stories about these cameras being like 14 feet up in a tree, looking down on a clearing. And, then the camera is destroyed, but there's nothing on it. It hasn't recorded anything.
Right. And it, because the Bigfoot comes from behind it and then grabs it and takes it down and tears it apart.
Yeah.
Because they're smart. They know they're there.
There are some pretty interesting theories about how do they know. And one of the theories is that they have a very sensitive hearing and can hear the electronic frequencies.
I've heard that too as well. You know, their sense of hearing, their sense of vision, especially at nighttime. You know, they apparently can see the infrared cameras, you know, as, you know, humans cannot see these infrared cameras, but they can. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons why, you know, when I go up, I have those infrared cameras, and, you know, good luck, I'll probably never be able to get one on them, only because they can see that light that we can't see.
Yeah.
A lot of people have actually said that they have witnessed the eyes of Bigfoot turn red. You know, I've actually heard from people as well that they actually sense, telekinesis, like, you know, the Bigfoot can actually send out some type of, you know, vibration towards a human, and they can actually feel it, like sense of fear or, you know, I mean, there's so many stories out there. It's hard to, you know, I've never had the opportunity to sense anything like this at all. I haven't even seen one yet. But, you know, there are so many stories out there. It's hard to say, you know, what is fact or not. But, you know, the people who I've spoken to and have credibility, they, you know, I know these things are for real. You know, they're up there. People with credibility are witnessing these creatures. There are families of these things living all over the world.
I wish we had more time, but we don't. We're out of time. I want to thank you, Jeff, for being with us this evening. And if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this in for a close. One thing that we do know for sure is that Jeffrey Gonzalez has windows preserved that have some things, DNA on it, that don't match the creatures that are known to be living in that area. And so we wish you all the best with the next DNA test. But if you will, Jeff, just stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this in for a conclusion. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.